I am Ed Renner. Welcome to my podcast, Forums for a Future. Forums for a Future is based on a university honors course I taught at the University of South Florida in 2007-2008. Three textbooks provide background reading for the individual episodes. They are Thomas Friedman's The World is Flat, Jared Diamond's Collapse, How Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed, and Gwen Dyer's Future Tense, The Coming World Order. The syllabus for the podcast series, text copies of all of the individual podcasts, and directions for subscribing to the series, either directly or through iTunes, are available on my website at kerenner.com. That is www.kerenner.com. The first 16 episodes are in audio format. They provide an academic, conceptual foundation for the series. After having taken nearly a one-year break to teach Forums for the Future, I am now ready to continue the series, but this time in both audio and video formats. As a way to get started on the continuation, I have created a three-part transition. Episodes 17, 18, and 19 provide a brief introduction of the conceptual foundation for those new to the series, and a quick review for the original subscribers. Starting with podcast number 20, the continuation of the podcast is an open-ended series of positive approaches for addressing the many specific, contemporary, economic, social, and political issues that challenge our capacity for making the changes necessary for having a future in the 21st century.
In today's podcast, number 22 in the series, the key concept is that the Iraq War provides a focal point for understanding the political implications of globalization. Specifically, the need to relinquish old beliefs and to adopt different constructs than those that prevailed through the nationalism of most of the modern era, ones that can embrace and contain the emergence of a new political order. We have already seen in the previous episode, podcast number 21, the crippling economic consequences of the financial cost of the Iraq War, at $10 billion per month in direct costs and a projected $3 trillion in total when all of the indirect costs are included, such as the long-term medical care for the wounded and the maimed. These costs, along with the false assumption that tax cuts and deficit spending could be indefinitely sustained through the consumer credit and leverage lending, broke the financial back of the United States. It started slowly in 1968 as a public policy and was increasingly embraced by the credit card consumerism of the American public over the last 40 years. It's escalated to be the defining endpoint of the modern era. This delusion of unlimited growth reduced the power and the stature of our country at the very time when those resources were absolutely essential for addressing the social and cultural issues of fixing a planet at risk and making the adjustments required for a transition to a new era. But the contribution of the Iraq War to the economic crisis was only half of the story. The other half is equally dangerous and debilitating. It is the damage done to the world political order and the devastation of the capacity to respond to global political challenges. The reexamination of the political consequences of the Iraq War has taken two forms. The first has been a superficial analysis implying strategic failure, such as the lack of an occupation plan. this perspective is largely the application of 20th century military concepts to a new circumstance, rather than recognizing the need for alternative political constructs. The second reexamination, one that is substantial and not superficial, starts from the premise that there are fatal conceptual flaws in how our political policies and institutions currently function, and that significant structural political changes are required for the postmodern era. This is what historical inflection points are all about. Inflection points are times where civic discussions create a new political context for moving beyond more of the same kind of thinking to something fundamentally different. To make this transition requires us to re-examine critical core beliefs and values and to entertain drastically different alternatives. There are several ideas that provide the basis for discarding the dysfunctional beliefs and values from the past and replacing them with ones for the new era, an era based on a breaking point where the future is discontinuous with the present. There are three big throwaway ideas that have politically dominated the endpoint of the 20th century. Number one, winning in Iraq but losing both the war on terror and the greater prospects of world order. First step in addressing the political order required for the new era is to openly acknowledge the actual reality of the war in Iraq as ill-conceived and ill-advised. It may be hard for contemporary Americans to throw off the false patriotism that has initiated and sustained this misadventure of winning in Iraq. John McCain, in the 2008 presidential campaign, gave explicit voice to this dangerous misconception, while Barack Obama understood why it is a perspective we must let go of.
If we had done what Senator Obama wanted done in Iraq, and that was set a date for withdrawal, which General Petraeus, our chief of chairman, our joint chiefs of staff, said would be a very dangerous course to take for America, I'll bring him home with victory and with honor. And that is a fundamental difference.
There has never been a country on earth that saw its economy decline and yet maintained its military superiority. We have put all chips in right there. And nobody is talking about losing this war. What we are talking about is recognizing that the next president has to have a broader strategic vision about all the challenges that we face. That's been missing over the last 8 years. That sense is something that I want to restore.
That's going to change when I'm president, but we can't change it unless we fundamentally change Senator McCain's and George Bush's foreign policy. It has not worked for America.
Winning is a military term, referring to the conquest of one contestant by another. The military capacity for the conquest and the physical occupation of Iraq was never in question. This is not the same, however, as winning in a political sense. By conservative estimates, the United States have killed more than 100,000 Iraqis, wounded or maimed 900,000, and made refuge of 4 million more people. That is 1 in 5 Iraqis who have been directly harmed. This is equivalent to more than 60 million Americans, touching virtually every family in the country, while their infrastructure, cities, economy, and daily security has been reduced to rubble. It is no surprise the Iraqi people want us out of their country for better or worse. We will never, in the living memory of its people, win their hearts or receive any credit for any good that may eventually result. Further, we have given Al-Qaeda their cause, thereby making the world a less safe place by undermining the capacity for the powers of the world to work together to create a more constructive world order, while derailing the world cooperation and financial capacity necessary for addressing a planet in peril. The desired outcome is not, by any standard that matters, winning by extracting the last drop of blood of resistance, but not winning, what McCain called losing, by any standard that matters, is about discarding the dysfunctional beliefs and values of attempting to create a permanent military presence in a democratic, pro-Western Iraqi government in the middle of the Arab world, and by replacing them with new constructs that recognize a completely different view of what is in fact reality. This is what inflection points are all about. They are about those moments where the future is discontinuous with the present. Number two is the delusion of the new American century. The invasion of Iraq was no fluke. It was the deliberate and deceptive execution of an ideological political objective based on the extension of worn-out concepts left over from the modern era, inappropriately projected into the 20th century. Specifically, after 9/11, a false and fabricated case was made for the need to attack Iraq to make the world safe from terrorism. What is now clear is that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11 and was never a serious threat to the United States. Rather, the invasion was the cover for an entirely different hidden agenda by the government to create a new American century. The collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War was seen by some as the opportunity for the United States to establish itself as the economic leader of the free world and the only significant military power, positioning our country to usher in an era of economic globalization and friction-free, market-driven capitalism. World order was to be ensured by the capacity of the United States to unilaterally provide blanket security for this process through its unchallengeable military capacity. This socio-economic political conviction became the foreign policy objective to enter into the 21st century and secure the future under the Bush Doctrine. Iraq offered what, at the time, seemed like the object lesson for the world: a quick and easy military victory, a warm reception by the Iraqi people freed from an oppressive dictator, the establishment of a pro-U.S. democratic government in the middle of the Muslim world, and a significant and lasting military presence in the Middle East through bases in Iraq, a country that just happened to have large oil reserves. The result was to be peace, security, and the stability and a seamless transition into the 21st century based on 20th century beliefs and values. In reality, the final tally was none of the above. With the Security Agreement of 2008, the United States is to withdraw from Iraq cities by June 2009 and be completely out of the country by December 31st, 2011, and to be subject to Iraqi political control in the interval, in a country not able to govern itself, with the United States having a depleted and overtaxed military, little respect in the rest of the world, a crushing national debt, a broken economy. But even more disturbing is that this distorted thinking was accomplished through a body of lies and misinformation fundamentally incompatible with the American democratic principles under the patriotic pretense of protecting and advancing freedom. The arrogance of this endeavor and the damage to our civic foundation is the price that is so large that it should stain the consciousness of the current generation for vigilance against such political excess that we cannot ever afford to allow it to happen again. And number three is the commercialization of international politics. The final worn-out construct is that economic globalization and friction-free, market-driven capitalism are the centerpiece of the beliefs and values appropriate for the international politics of the 21st century. Rather, the required conceptual shift is to replace these constructs, that the creation of wealth and unlimited growth is the path of choice to the future, with the social, cultural notion of sustainability as the basic conceptual unit, the currency of exchange for domestic and international political policies. There are three new ideas needed to dominate the transition to the new era of the 21st century, ideas which offer a discontinuous break from the past. The first, number one, is redefining the terms of engagement. When nation states were in conflict in the modern era, they had a geographic boundary, ultimately reduced to the Soviet bloc and NATO. Geographic spheres of influence are no longer the terms of engagement. In return for Iraq's acceptance of the 2008 Security Agreement, the United States had to agree not to use Iraqi soil to launch military attacks across its border into neighboring Arab countries. The large number of civilian casualties in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan has given new meaning to the forewarning and precursor of the phrase, rice farmer by day, Viet Cong by night, as one of the lessons from Vietnam. The result has been broad popular resistance to U.S. military operations to fight the global war on terror in these and other allied countries, to such levels to either force a withdrawal, threaten the collapse of the established government, or the creation and support of puppet regimes sustained by financial arms aid and a military presence. In the process, the United States has run out of money, deployable troops, and goodwill abroad, and increasingly so at home. This level of world disharmony is in contrast to the worldwide universal support received immediately after 9/11, including in the streets of Tehran. The delusion of a new American century quickly snuffed out this glimpse of an opening for redefining the terms of engagement from a military response to one of international cooperation to address a cascade of events that threaten the planet. These events, symbolized by the conspicuous consumption of the United States and its reverberations through the U.S.-defined agenda of free trade, military power, and social values, have created ever-widening gaps in wealth and income within and between all of the nations of the world. Air, climate, food, water, shelter, and safety are the common wealth of the world and require, in a political sense, a commonwealth of world citizenship. The second is creating a new world order. The framework for a political commonwealth is building and strengthening world citizenship, not citizenships of the world. This new world order can only be accomplished by achieving and respecting the balance of power. It cannot be won by holding the balance of power as envisioned by the delusional dream of a new American century. There is no amount of military power that the United States can muster that can enforce the degree of order and security required for that misplaced arrogance in the 21st century without sacrificing the very freedom and democracy that is appropriately held to be the cradle for innovation and imagination that has and will continue to drive human progress. It is in the creation of world citizenship that is the precondition for creating a new world order. It is not the arms industry or the economics of globalization and friction-free, market-driven capitalism. A civic foundation for a planet at peril is the political construct for building a bridge to the future. No country is better situated to assume this role than the United States. Perhaps the presidential election of 2008 will be an inflection point for the relinquishing a desperate decade of holding on to constructs from the past and to embracing the change that we have been waiting for. And number three is reclaiming international leadership. Information and knowledge is the new capital for the new era, not money in the economic sense of wealth. The most important struggle in the transition from the modern to the postmodern era will be to keep this new form of capital as a common wealth and not follow the old path of allowing it to become investment and proprietary wealth in the form of money. Our current and essential challenge for the future is to create new constructs for establishing and enhancing knowledge as public domain, not a commodity for financial gain. We now know what we need to know and what we have to do to have 6 billion plus people live sustainably on this planet. The social and the cultural beliefs and values that will make this possible is to keep knowledge and information in their broadest possible social, political, and economic definitions in the public domain as the currency for the next chapter in human progress as common wealth. Profit and money are to be made through the delivery of this promise and capacity, not through copyright, patent, or ownership. There is no other path. The credit card consumerism that defined the economic engine that drove us to the end of the modern era is over. The threshold we must cross is finding new ways to think about how the economic, political, and social, as our core beliefs and values, are to be simultaneously reconfigured to reflect a new reality. It is a reality that for the first time in human history, an era will span a single lifetime. It is the age of the millennials. This is a huge psychological challenge for which we have no charts. The next podcast will look at our sense of self in the postmodern world and how we might start to think about how we think about ourselves. If we really are the change we have been waiting for, we need to be thinking about what it means to live with constant, fundamental change as the only consonant. Thank you for the day.